10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Live from London, this is the Sunday Morning Breakfast Show with Sobhya Iqbal on Teachers Talk Radio.
Good morning. You're listening to Sobhya Stella Sunday. It's Sunday, the 19th of September. We have the best conversations coming your way, bringing virtual reality into the classroom, how to engage parents with online learning, and how to create globally connected classrooms. We're also discussing menopause and how to support our colleagues best in the workplace. It's another thrilling morning. Prepare for takeoff.
Live from London, this is the Sunday Morning Breakfast Show with Sobhya Iqbal on Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live on the Podbean app or desktop player. Just head over to www.podbean.com/lsw/ttradio or search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Live from London.
We're in Singapore today with Craig Kemp. Craig works with departments, ministries, school leadership, communities and educators to understand, design and implement digital learning solutions and transformations to improve teaching practice and student learning outcomes. We'll be discussing all things EdTech, VR, how to engage boys in technology and engage parents with online learning. We'll also be discussing how to create globally connected classrooms and lots more. We're going to come back to Craig in just a moment. Good morning. Welcome to the show, everybody. Craig, can you hear me this morning?
I can, yeah. Thank you so much for having me today.
Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing so well, thank you. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Brilliant. Craig, for our listeners, can you tell us what is your background and what's your role?
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for having me. Pleasure to be here. My background is, as you can tell by the accent, I'm from New Zealand. I'm a teacher. I've been a leader in schools for almost 20 years now. Been in public and private education about 10 years ago. I moved to Singapore, worked in multiple curriculum schools, Australian curriculum school, and then my last role was director of technology and innovation at a large American international school. 2 years ago, left that, started my own consultation company working with schools all over the world. And then recently I started a business called EduSpark as well. So a lot of things. I don't know how I'd describe my role right now. I guess it would be like a supporting role, helping teachers, schools be successful in what they do with technology.
That sounds fabulous. Now, when I was doing research on you, I found out a lot of information, which was fantastic, because someone who's into ed tech was really, really keen to find out a lot more about it. You've done a lot in your career. What's your inspiration behind it?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, I never knew or never thought that I'd be a teacher. You know, I never thought I'd be in education. And probably when I was 18 and I left high school and I just thought, man, what am I going to do with my life? Like, what do I want to do? Big into sports, you know, big into coaching and helping people in the sports field, and really loved that. But I really didn't know what I wanted to do. And I sort of one day I just had a discussion with my mum, and kind of three years earlier when I was about 15, my mum had decided to go back and retrain. She'd always been, you know, stay-at-home mom, an amazing job, you know, an inspiration in many ways. But really the inspiration that got me into teaching was her, because at the age of, you know, 50, she decided to retrain and become a teacher, and invested the last sort of 10 years of her teaching career into education. And that really inspired me. You know, I really saw the passion she had for working with kids and making a difference. And that's a lot of what I do now as well, you know, wanting to make a difference. And I get a buzz from helping other people. And, you know, I think that's really driven by her and what I saw in her You know, and I always say this, you know, never underestimate the things you see and the things you do, even if no one mentions them at the time, they can make a big impact. And, you know, now I have conversations with ex-students and parents, and I just think, wow, you know, even though you didn't know at the time, you made a big difference in the life of someone. And, you know, and that always has stuck with me too. So, you know, kind of a cool story in a lot of ways. And, you know, it's kind of cliche that it's my mum, but, you know, it really did make a big difference.
No, it does make a difference. And what you've just said actually does explain everything clearly in terms of modeling. Like people, children especially, do pick up on our behavior and our actions and the things that we're doing. So clearly we can see that's come through in your background and experience. I've already said to you this behind the scenes. I was listening to one of your EdTech podcasts called Ignite. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I loved listening to it. It's got lots of little tips in it and hints for those of you who are interested in EdTech. How long has it been going on for? What kind of content do you have? And what kind of information do you present? And for is it just for schools? Is it for people outside of schools who might be interested in education? What's your podcast all about?
Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. It's been going for a little over a year now. And really the story behind it is I used to blog a lot. And my blog, you know, I'm the sort of person that I can talk about anything. You know, I love to chat, but I hate writing. You know, I really do hate putting things down. So my blogging started when I was, you know, a student teacher, actually. And I used it as a way of sharing and expressing my learning at Teachers Training College. And it continued into my teaching and I loved it. Realized that I had an audience and people loved sort of learning along with me, beside me. And from there, I realized I really didn't like it. So I wanted to start transfer the way I was sharing content out to an audio format. And then, you know, I really got into podcasting, just like just about every other person during COVID. And quite early on, about a year and a half ago now, quite early stages of COVID and here in Singapore. And that's when I started, you know, and the Ignite EdTech podcast now is a weekly podcast every Friday morning, Singapore here, you know, Thursday evening in the UK, drop a new episode up to about episode 65 now, I think. Wow. So, you know, we've been going for quite a long time, about, you know, 65 weeks, I guess, with a few weeks in between and having some breaks, but each episode is 20, 25 minutes. It's really focused around ed tech and how to use technology authentically and purposefully in schools. It's a really global focus. So for those of you listening and thinking, you know, maybe it's not for me because I'm in the UK or I'm in a particular country, I talk to experts from all over the world, you know, very similar to this in a lot of ways, like bringing in the best of the best from all over the world, teachers, leaders, thought leaders, you know, people in classrooms, leadership roles, you name it, companies. I talk about, you know, tips and advice, how to use technology to be successful. And I interview companies as well.
Yeah. And so, Craig, that's all fantastic. In terms of ed tech, I mean, you've got this huge amount of experience behind you. Based on your experience, who are the best thought leaders on ed tech at the moment? Who should we all be following? What books and authors can you recommend for those of us who are looking to find more information about it? Because obviously when you're working in certain types of schools, sometimes your information is limited, and also within countries as well, sometimes your information is limited. So who should we be following and what kind of things should we be reading?
Yeah, I think a few names come to mind. The first name is Alec Kuros. You'll know Alec and George Kuros from the US or from Canada, and amazing minds in the space of EdTech. A couple of others, Jennifer Williams in the US as well, Victoria Thompson, Ivo Hanan, who was in the UAE, now moved back to the UK, doing incredible things with innovation and technology. On the books and authors side, you know, for me, I get asked this question a lot, and to me, there are three. The first one is not specifically EdTech, but Simon Sinek. His book, Start With Why. For me, the why is everything, so really being able to justify that why. The second book, George Kuros, The Innovator's Mindset. empowering teachers and leaders to wonder and explore and be at the forefront of innovation. And then my third go-to recommended book is Social Leadia by Jennifer Casser-Todd, all around digital leadership and about using technology authentically and purposefully for improving lives and well-being.
And, you know, you've just mentioned that you go across the whole world. So this is an exclusive. If you are listening today, those are the best people that Craig has found across the whole world for EdTech. And it's brilliant. I mean, I've seen some of his work and it really is fantastic. Craig, you've recently set up something called EduSpark. Why did you set it up and what's included? Because for me, I can see that you've now become a proper entrepreneur, or is it edupreneur that they call it now? But you've actually gone global and you've made this your whole thing. So what is it and what's included? Why did you set it up?
Yeah, thank you. It's, you know, EduSpark is a new professional learning platform. In my mind, you know, long story short, as a someone who's been in many professional learning sessions, been a leader of a lot of professional learning sessions, just being incredibly frustrated in, you know, professional learning being broken and wanting to really shake up and break down the CPD model. So 7 months ago, brought on board 6 developers and really started sharing and creating what is eduspark.world today. We launched live 3 weeks ago. And, you know, at eduspark.world, we have 35 courses up across 8 learning areas from literacy, numeracy, edtech and innovation, well-being, leadership. You know, the list goes on. Another 35 behind the scenes in development. By December, we'll have about 100 programs up here. We're developing, you know, by teachers for teachers. This is not another business. It's not another, you know, corporation behind the scenes. It's me and a whole bunch of teachers creating the idea of what professional learning could and should be. We're at what I call the MVP stage now, what's live, which is the minimum viable product. You know, and anyone that's been in this the space of building and developing their own thing before, you know, it's tough. It's tough to build technology. And we've built everything from scratch. And that's kind of the exciting thing about it. So you can go to eduspark.world. Now, about 30% of programs that are up there are free and accessible to anyone. You can jump in, you can explore. We've got creators from 20 different countries already leading learning up here. Just counting before, we've got 6 creators from the UK who have courses live already.
So the people who built, sorry to interrupt you, the people who built it, are they educators who are programmers who built it themselves from scratch?
Good question. So it's mine. So eduspark.world is, I guess, my baby, and I've brought on board developers who have been in education before. They're not teachers, but they know how to make things. So the business itself is developed by teachers. The development is being built by incredible designers, coders and creators behind the scenes who have built other edtech solutions before. So it's an exciting collaboration because, like you said, you know, and that question's a really important one, is a lot of businesses out there now are built by, you know, people who've never been in education before. And it's kind of critical to me to make sure that we put education at the forefront and make sure that we have teachers at the forefront of that as well. So thanks for pointing that out. You know, the other thing that we're doing in here is building this for schools, so that schools can actually come in here and actually build their own courses using our technology, using our data insights. We're GDPR compliant, and you know, all of that stuff. I'm not going to go into a lot of details now, but go and check it out, eduspark.world. If people want a more detailed look, you know, reach out to me. I'm more than happy to help and to share more on it.
And focusing on this idea of the edupreneur, you present at conferences worldwide, and that's basically because of your experience and everything you've done. How can educators get involved in things like this? Do you need any training? And what if someone wanted to do what you're doing right now? What would they need to do to get to that stage?
Yeah, I mean, it's great. I love it. But I'm also, you know, and many people listening may feel this way as well. You know, I often come across as someone that's pretty confident, you know, definitely an extrovert, but I'm actually an introvert. I'm this sort of thing scares me. And I got butterflies in my stomach even talking to you now. You know, the whole idea of being out there and speaking to people. And I've done it thousands of times before. And every day I get nervous and worried about it. But I love it. And the whole conference scene is the same. You know, if you want to do it, do it. There's opportunities out there, you know, and now more than ever, conferences are moving online. You know, we've realized now that we can do this online and we can connect to people all over the world at the touch of a button. You know, I'm here in Singapore connecting to this incredible show. You know, there's an opportunity to be able to connect and engage here. So I think the most important thing for people listening now to sort of think to themselves is, if you have something you want to share, do it. There's thousands of people out there that want to learn from you. Even if you're someone who hates using technology or is afraid of it, it doesn't matter. There's people like you that want to learn from people like you. You don't have to be an expert. You don't have to have training. You have to have a passion and you have to be willing to share. But that's it. Go and reach out to companies, conferences, you know, any opportunity that you have, jump at it. And that's probably the most important thing. And if you want an inroad, reach out. You know, I'm always happy to help. And, you know, I know there's other people here that would be happy to help out as well. Just jump on, give it a go.
You heard it here, folks. If you want to get involved in any EdTech conferences, please contact Craig. Okay, Craig, let's go on to discussing virtual reality and get into some hardcore EdTech stuff. So I've always played around with virtual reality, but I haven't fully brought it into the classroom. And partly the reason is because of the school that I'm currently in. We don't have the infrastructure to be able to deal with a lot of new things right now. In terms of virtual reality, how will it add value to student learning in the classroom? Is it affordable for schools and is it worth the investment? And for those people who don't know, can you just explain what virtual reality is as well beforehand? Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. VR is a really interesting one. So VR or virtual reality, you know, you've probably seen it or heard about it before. You know, probably famous for tools like Google Expeditions. You throw on a headset and with a mobile device in it or an all-encompassing headset and you go to a different place and journey to a different location or do something different. And, you know, it closes you off from the real world. So the world that you're exposed to is a virtual world. And, you know, it's been big for a long time, but it's really never taken off in education. You know, it was big for me in our school here in Singapore, 3,500 student American International School. We had sets of VRs across our school 3 or 4 years ago. And, you know, it's a ridiculously big expense of those. So to answer your question about affordability, VR is expensive. There are some cheaper ideas or versions out there. But in my opinion, you know, using VR and having used it for a long time, I don't think it's worth the investment. You know, I really don't. I think there's so many other ways you can go about it. But in saying that, it's very context specific. You know, you mentioned your school, Sylvia, and, you know, I've worked with other schools as well. It has to fit a purpose. And I think I go back to what Simon Sinek says about, you know, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. If you can justify the use of it, go for it and explore it. But I'm actually a bigger fan of augmented reality and AR. And the reason for that is I don't like the experience of being closed off from the real world. I like immersing myself in the real world. So augmented reality to me is something that's more exciting, more simple, lower cost. The ability to jump on a mobile device and, you know, and explore the world. And a tool, one of the tools that I've used for it is Hologo, H-O-L-O-G-O, Hologo, which I've really enjoyed jumping on and exploring a lot of content for free, really heavily focused in education. So to answer your questions, number one, adding value to student learning, engagement, probably one of the biggest things, engaging students in that. And I know we're going to talk about boys in technology soon as well. It's a great way to engage boys and girls in the learning experience. Affordability, I think VR is way overpriced. I think it's education isn't necessarily ready for it. I don't think it's really focused on it right now. There are some cool tools out there, and I'm sure people can share some in the chat here as well. But for me, it's AR. I think that's far better for an investment, much lower cost, much easier to access and easier to use.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in VR, and I did go to an event by Apps Event, and this is a shout out to them because they actually have someone called John Neal who's actually showing how to use VR within the classroom. And it's interesting because you've said that there are some instances in some schools that VR is very, very hard to integrate within the classroom. Mm-hmm. But if you've financially can afford it, it is something that you can look into. And one of the things that John Neal was saying, he was saying that there are applications out there now, such as ThingLink, which mm-hmm. is a 360 image, which you can add your own labels and things like that, and you can explore the world. And there are other applications such as Tour Creator, where you can create your own virtual tours. And I don't know if you know this, Craig, but there's quite a few new apps out there recently called Frame VR, which are 3D environments for blended learning. So you can create mm-hmm. little avatars, have voice chat, text chat, webcams and screenshots, etc. And it comes back to what you're saying. Is it going to make an impact on the learning, and what's the reason for having it within the classroom? So you have to be very, very specific in thinking about why you are going to be using mm-hmm. it and if it is beneficial in the learning environment. And with regards to AR, a couple of other applications that are out there. One's called Merge Cube, which is all about simulations. And that's mostly to do with science. So if you're a science teacher and you're looking to bring some interactivity within to your lessons, that's something worth looking at. And obviously, you've got Google Arts and Culture, another program called Scavenger for Geography. And I didn't know this. Maybe you can enlighten me, Craig. Did you know that through Keynote, there's something called AR Maker? You can actually create your own interactive online virtual reality book or augmented reality book. Did you know that?
I actually did, but I have never used it before. I've seen a few people online sharing about it, a guy named Paul Hamilton out of Australia doing some incredible things with it, actually. So I've been watching, but even being the tech guy, I'm still just in the watching phase at the moment, snooping in on what other people are doing. I haven't taken the step and the leap to using it myself.
And I think, Craig, that's the best way to do it, to find out what other people are doing and follow them. Because what you just said about mobile VR, there are a few schools that I found who are doing it on a budget, but you have to be very careful because obviously they're using mobile phones, they're using student devices. But, you know, you can use YouTube VR, Google Expeditions, even Nearpod is a great way of using it. But I think you summed it up for me very nicely, that it is a huge investment. And if as a school you are going to be looking into that with anything that's regarding ed tech, the first thing to do is work out whether it is going to be beneficial and it is going to contribute to teaching and learning in a big way. What's the impact on it for students and obviously attainment as well at the end of that? Okay, so moving on to gamification quickly, and again, this is part of EdTech. Can you just explain to us what gamification is and what are the key benefits and what kind of apps and resources are out there and if it's effective or not?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, gamification is the whole idea of, you know, adding games to a non-game environment, trying to simplify it. You know, I'm not a gamification expert, but I've certainly seen some amazing gamification applications as well in classrooms that I work with. The whole idea really is, you know, how do you bring the whole gaming experience into learning? You know, competitions, quizzes, point scoring, those sorts of things that can actually, you know, for a classroom, really bring engagement to a different level. You know, the whole idea of Class Dojo, you know, those sorts of tools, Kahoot, Quizzes, Quizlet, those sorts of programs that allow us to connect and engage and actually interact in that gamified experience. A couple of others that are my favorites that I've used in my classroom before as well. GymKit, Book Widgets, Classcraft, if you haven't used it, and of course Kahoot. So the whole idea of bringing that gamified experience to engage people in learning.
And so can you just explain what Classcraft is? Because I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, so Classcraft is fun. So if you've been in before, you know, and you've thought about behavior-wise what you can do, the whole idea of Classcraft is bringing people together, gamifying the experience, giving people rewards or giving students rewards or experience points. Think of it like, how would I best describe it? Like Dungeons and Dragons almost, like the whole idea of this virtual world, but engaging kids in unlocking privileges or recognizing positive behaviors. So it's a really great way. If you've used Class Dojo before, it's that sort of experience, but at a different level. You don't have to be an expert at doing it, but it's a great way to integrate, you know, that social emotional learning into your classroom and really reward positive behaviors.
That sounds great. It sounds very similar to CoSpaces, which is also a virtual reality VR AR application. And it's brilliant. All of these things are really worth investigating and having a look at what suits your context. Moving on forward, Craig, I went to Japan. And I'm always telling my students this in business studies because obviously I'm IT and business. And there's a section on automation and robots and things like that. In terms of, you know, robots within the classroom, have you seen any fascinating things that have really taken off? What kind of experiences have you seen that make learning exciting again?
Yeah, so, you know, when I think about robots in the classroom, I think, you know, similar to my opinion on VR, I guess. I think, you know, it's an experience that might be engaging, but I've never really seen it long-term being successful, you know, particularly with robotics. I think there's a lot of great robotics tools out there. I think it's a great supplementary tool to learning, but I just think it keeps coming back to that whole idea of HR, you know, human relationships and human resources in our classrooms. You know, as teachers, we're the ones that drive that engagement and that learning experience. Robotics can add to that and robots can add to that. And, you know, I've seen some amazing stuff in Japan as well with robot restaurants and other bits and pieces. But, you know, I've never seen robotics that have been long-term or robots that are long-term in the classroom that engage us.
Okay, brilliant. Let's move on to boys and technology then. You are experienced in this. How can we engage boys in technology? And for those boys who struggle with literacy, is it a good way to enhance that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, I use technology all the time in my classroom. I think there's plenty of literacy-based tools out there that can support this. But again, at the end of the day, it comes down to that human resource that drives this. You know, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. So if you can be clear about the goals and expectations, you know, boys and girls will understand that. So when we're using technology, there has to be a clear purpose. So when we're thinking about boys, you know, what are we doing to engage boys in the use of technology? We talked about gamification before, and typically gamifying learning experiences using tools like Classcraft, ClassDojo, Kahoot, a really great way to engage boys in that learning. And then when we sort of combine that into literacy, there are some fantastic ways of using technology to boost engagement in literacy. You know, tools like Book Creator, as an example, creating writing samples, publishing experiences. You know, I love the idea of using technology to create authentic audiences, particularly for boys, you know, engaging them in that literacy space so that they have an audience, a global audience that they can connect and share to. The same goes for reading. Tools like Epic, E-P-I-C, you know, getepic.com, I think is the website. It's been a game changer in many classrooms for engaging particularly boys, but girls also, in the idea of how literacy can actually be fun. You know, it doesn't have to be hard and challenging and difficult, but there are ways around, you know, really showing people how to use technology to enhance those experiences.
And obviously, we've just been through a pandemic and we've just come out of remote learning. One of the major, major issues that I found and most educators found, not just across the country, but globally, finding it really hard to engage parents with online learning. So how can we, what's the best way to support parents and get them engaged? Because obviously we don't know what their experiences are. How can we get them engaged?
Yeah, I think It's a really, really important part of our journey, you know, that important triangle between students, teachers, and home, and making sure that, you know, we talk about it all the time in a physical setting, you know, when we're in the school and we're bringing people in, but that's not possible now. You know, it's not always possible. And for many people around the world are still in remote learning. And I think the whole idea of being open and honest and transparent, but also bringing kids into the frame. You know, kids can do a lot more than we give them credit for, letting them lead learning, share learning, but being very open about this. So, you know, I've worked with schools over the last 12 months supporting tech training in particular, like what we've been teaching the teachers and the students. We've also offered the same learning experiences for parents, making sure that they have the opportunity to learn too, offering weekly sessions, online learning libraries, you know, pre-recorded videos, allowing people to come in. Even if you're catering to one or two people, you'd be surprised at how quickly that spreads across the community, you know, how quickly they share that out. So I think, you know, letting them know that their job is not necessarily to lead the learning, it's there to support the learning. So I think one of the things that I've noticed is that parents get really worried about this process at home. And the worrying part is, I think, the difference often, and media portray this to be quite incorrect at a lot of times, the difference between homeschooling and home learning, and the whole idea that you are there to help us. You know, we will lead. We're the ones that are trained professionals in this space. But you can support that. And the way that you can support that is by asking questions. The way that you can support that is by driving engagement. You know, and we can help by using tools like Seesaw, for example, sharing in portfolio tools that can help open up some of those lines of communication. So I think just being open, honest, sharing, giving resources and support, and just continuing to do that, rather than just saying, you know, I think we're at the end of this now. Let's stop and move on.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the idea of having parental workshops, and it's something that I've been involved in for a long time before I came to my current school. And I think it's just important to have that communication with parents, because there is this anxiety for parents that, like you said, that they're going to be taking over the learning. And essentially, it's not that, it's just supporting them and facilitating their learning. And I think one thing that we have to remember is that there is this divide. And, you know, digital skills divide, that there are some parents who are scared of technology. And just like educators, you need to be able to work with them and support them in exactly the same way with, you know, with being caring and understanding and making sure that they know exactly how to use it. And I really like the idea of using students. So in my school, for example, we've just set up digital champions, where we've got a team of students who are now going around supporting staff and will be supporting parents as well. And it's a really good way of making sure that, you know, you have got this community build up, because often what happens in schools is, you know, it gets left on the IT department, or it gets left on certain members of staff, and it's not. It's supposed to be a whole school process. Thank you for explaining all of that, because that's just become a lot clearer for everybody, I think. I'm just going to come back to you in a moment, Craig. We've got loads of people who are listening in globally today, which is fantastic to see. So obviously Craig's from Singapore. We've got Maya in from Egypt this morning. We've got Merab from Uganda in East Africa. It's really, really good to see loads of people in the studio. Anawara from London. Good morning, Ryan. Okay. Craig, speaking of global connections and being globally connected, how can we engage students in a globally connected classroom? I saw on your blog that you had done some fantastic things with this. How can we as educators become globally connected as well? I know we've got Twitter, everything, but what other things can we do to break down the walls of the classroom to really get that learning on a global scale into our rooms?
Yeah, I think really important initially, you know, a shout out to Twitter. That's been a game changer for me. It really has. And connecting and engaging with authentic audiences from all over the world, it's just an amazing way to connect and engage as a professional. But, you know, I've done a lot with tools like Mystery Skype, you know, connecting and engaging, connecting people all over the world, which I think you know, brings people together in more than one way. A tool that I also loved and connected to on this, the global connections front, is Empatico, all around empathy and engaging kids in countries all over the world, which some of the people here may have seen and heard as well. But, you know, it's that, go back again to what I was saying about literacy and boys in education. It's that authentic audience, you know, giving and receiving feedback, the idea of connecting and engaging with people who want to connect and engage, that are there to learn, getting our student voice out there as well. You know, the whole idea of asking for help and getting it and bringing people together. I think for me, the tools are not actually important. It's that connection that's important. The ability to jump on a Zoom or, you know, Empatico to get that authentic connection. It's about offering opportunities. And as a teacher, often we are scared to offer those opportunities because technology sometimes scares us. But the tools that are out there now make it really easy for us to be able to do that. And I'm more than happy to always, you know, if there's people listening here from all over the world, I'm always happy to connect people to friends and family and schools that I work with, because we're so much stronger together. So I'm really pleased you brought up this idea of, you know, globally connected classrooms.
And so on your blog, I was reading that you use Skype within the classroom, for example, and there was this whole section on you bringing in old astronauts from NASA who mm-hmm. were actually giving talks and speeches to children within the classroom. And we're not talking about secondary school kids here in the UK. We're talking about primary school children. And yeah. I thought that was fascinating, the fact that you could go globally across the whole world and connect with anyone and actually bring that live into the classroom and actually show children what their working environment is, what kind of things they're doing. I thought it was a brilliant way to bring enhanced learning.
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible story, actually, about our grade three class and at my old school a few years ago now. But they were learning about space, and the kids had quite a few in-depth inquiry-based questions. And I said to them, you know, let's ask the world, you know, I'm not an expert in this, and it's okay for us as teachers to say, well, I don't know, but let's go find out. Now, we're connected now in this world that our kids know no different. You know, we're the last generation as adults to sort of know the difference of before and after technology. Our kids don't know that. So connecting and jumping online and doing that, I put a tweet out and got the kids to help me write it on my account, and we sent it out there and just said, hey, we're learning about space. Are there experts here that can help us all over the world? And I woke up the next morning and, you know, we had an astronaut, we had people tagging other people in. And within a week, we were actually able to have an astronaut talk live with the kids across time zones. Amazing, here in Singapore. We had people from a spacesuit design company answer our kids' questions about what's important. And we had kids talk with kids in a NASA camp about, you know, what they're learning about space as well. Such authentic learning experiences that came from asking a question in a globally connected environment.
Yeah, and I mean, you could really make a project out of this. It doesn't have to be something in isolation. It could be connected across the Absolutely. Whole school as a whole school project and bring in different themes and, you know, make it into something really big. I mean, we used to do it in one of the schools I worked in. In fact, the very first school that I worked in when I was an NQT, I was kind of lucky. I was in a really good school. And we had learning experiences across every single department almost. And we were connected to lots of schools around the world. And it was just amazing. It was amazing that we had children and we had educators sharing learning experiences. And there are schools who are doing this in a really fantastic way. So my advice to listeners is that if you can get that learning environment set up in your classrooms and you can connect to people across the world, it's a really good way to do it. You know, it's something that I think that kids really do enjoy. And you can learn a great deal from other countries and other people as well. Craig, where do you see the future of EdTech? Because obviously there's this shift now where, you know, the pandemic's happened, we're in remote learning, but we're not kind of, because now we've gone back to normal. Mm. What kind of future do you see? Because obviously Singapore's a futuristic country. Where do you see it going, and what kind of innovation can we expect to see within education over the next few years?
Yeah, I think COVID's definitely changed things. I think we're in a better position potentially in this space because of it. You know, we've all been forced to use technology and embrace it. I think there's probably three or four key areas. The first one is augmented reality. I'm quite a big believer in AR and its space within education, actually, in comparison to expensive VR tools. And I think the whole idea of AR is coming. And I think if you're interested in this, definitely look up Google Glass as well as a good example of what's coming. The whole idea of in an augmented world going on a virtual field trip, taking your class to ancient Egypt or to go deep sea diving without the need to buy expensive VR equipment. I think that's one big space.
Yeah, just to add on to that, Google Glass, Craig, is there anything schools need to know with respect to any safeguarding or any other issues that are behind the scenes? Because obviously we're talking about tech, which is fantastic, but we need to know this whole wide range of issues and concerns that we have behind it as well. Is there anything schools should be aware of?
Yeah, I think most importantly, you know, it's context specific, but do your research. You know, don't just go and buy the latest and greatest gadgets and things. Do your research. It's really important to know what's behind it. You know, companies now are very wary of releasing tools and resources, particularly in education. So make sure you go away, you ask questions, you jump online and you look at reviews and you see what's out there. From a safeguarding perspective, I like experiences like in Hologo that I talked about earlier on, where the teacher can actually control the learning experience. I'm a big fan of that. So I look for tools where I can control it. It's not just a global free-for-all where they can be engaging with other people. I think that's really important. And of course, from a safety perspective, do your research around, you know, the technology and what you're buying. I think it is really important. I think, sorry.
Carry on.
To a couple of other things, you know, one of them is artificial intelligence and AI. Which is huge, you know, really, really huge in, you know, in the future for us in supporting data and driving those next steps in learning. I think we see it already. Two other things very quickly is coding as a language, actually using computer science and coding as we're seeing it in some international schools now, where schools are actually offering coding as a language, as a substitute for languages like Mandarin or Spanish, which I'm really excited about, you know, for those kids that really love the idea of writing or reading or creating code or applications. And then my last thing is biometrics, and it's sort of a new learning space for me, but biometrics is something we see in the security industry quite a lot, yes. You know, fingerprints, facial recognition, voice, those sorts of things. But in terms of education, schools are already using a lot of this, fingerprinting. I was in a school a couple of years ago in China that was using facial recognition as kids entered to mark off their attendance, borrowing books from library. But, you know, one of the things I've been reading about is eye tracking, particularly in being online and tools that use our cameras to track eye recognition. There's a tool called Mirror Metrics using something called S2 Eye Tracker. So if it interests you, you know, it's pretty techy, but it's using this eye tracking technology to assess how students learn by getting details of where they look during online sessions. And there are all sorts out there, you know, for Windows and Android, there's an application called iTribe. And there's a whole lot out there, but really interesting.
Yeah, it is very fascinating. But don't you think it's a bit too big brother? I mean, there's all these things that are coming in, which is fantastic, because obviously being coming from a computer science background like myself, I do find it all fascinating. And I do think that education is slightly behind with the times. And, you know, I've got friends who are programmers and they're doing, you know, really advanced stuff in industry right now with big data analytics and all sorts of things. And I'm looking at some of these things that come coming in, and I'm just like, it might be a bit too much big brother. Yeah. Like what China's doing, for example, having things in the classroom like eye tracking and things like that. I love it. I think it's fantastic because obviously you can track to see whether students are learning. For those of you who've not done research, eye tracking is basically when you're online or you're watching what students are doing, you can actually, based on their senses and things that they're doing, you can actually work out what's going on in terms of their learning, whether they're actually learning or not. But I don't know. It just seems a bit too big brother to me. What do you think?
Yeah, it's I laugh a little bit here because, you know, I tend to agree. It freaks me out a little bit, but I also, you know, that's what intrigues me about it. You know, that's what excites me about it. This whole idea that if we can harness the power of technology to add value to learning, you know, truly, you know, some of the things we talked about today, imagine if we can use this to help engage our boys in using, you know, in developing their literacy skills, if it's going to inform data or decision-making processes without invading privacy, you know, that's what interests me. I think we're still a ways away from using it in our classrooms, but I think it's something to keep an eye on. You know, I think that for me as well, it is a little bit too big brotherish. It's a little bit too, you know, we're watching you. But I think that as this develops, this concept develops, and, you know, we immerse ourselves in this idea, I think we're going to see this slowly interweaving into our practice. You know, if we can show the evidence that it enhances learning or adds value to learning, then I think we're going to see it starting to come in. But yeah, it's definitely something to do your research on and think about before we move too far down that track.
And finally, Craig, just to finish off, in terms of the issues and the problems with bringing tech into education, what are the major things that have held you back from moving and progressing forward? And what can we do as educators to ensure that, you know, we are, obviously we know that we need to pick the right tech tools, but it's more than that. What could we do to actually ensure that our students are getting the best possible learning experiences, which are, you know, in line with industry? You know, because that's what they're going to be using in 5 years' time. And the fact that schools are still behind is just a huge concern for me.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. One is budgets in schools. And that's hard because I think we need to make sure that governments, you know, schools, private schools need to make sure they invest more in technology and not just the tech itself, but the training of people to use tech well. That's critical. The second thing for me is training and making sure that we establish strong training programs to add value to the learning. If we're not investing in training, CPD, professional learning, then we're not doing ourselves justice because, like you said, we're already a long way behind. If we don't continue to invest in the space, we're going to keep getting further and further behind as well. And then probably the last thing for me is just being confident, you know, confidence and competence in ourselves and believing that we can do it. I think it's critical. And that's often held me back and held my friends and colleagues back before. No, I don't know if I can do it. I'm going to wait for someone else to do it. Take a risk, try something new. You're not going to break it. So it's just that whole idea of jumping outside of your comfort zone sometimes that as teachers, we often struggle with.
Brilliant. Craig, it's been very insightful. Lots of nuggets of information there. Thank you so much for coming on to our show today.
Absolute pleasure. You know, thank you so much for having me. I've absolutely loved it. And I've just been following along on Twitter and sharing stuff out as well as, you know, the feed here. And thank you for everyone that's jumped on board and thanks for the invite.
And just to let everybody know, Craig has offered several times that if you do want to get in touch with him to ask him information or work alongside him in EdTech, just feel free to message him mm-hmm. whenever you want. Do you want to give out your details, Craig?
Yeah, social media, Mr. Kemp NZ. You can look at eduspark.world. You can send me an email or connect with me across social media. You can find me, Craig Kemp Singapore on LinkedIn. Won't be trouble to find me. Just reach out, throw anything my way, and I'm always happy to help.
Great. Thank you so much, Craig. I'll catch up with you later.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Bye. Okay, great. We're going to head over to the news now and our sponsors, and then we'll come back where we're joined with Helen Clare.
Creative Resources, made for teachers by teachers. At Creative Resources, we've been rethinking what a classroom can be. We've created a huge range of more than 2,500 original and exciting resources that span across more than 15 different subject areas. Whether you're looking for primary or secondary level resources, careers options, PSHE, arts or humanities, Creative Resources have the resources for you. We offer full curriculum packages and unique challenging escape rooms themed on topics such as Shakespeare, Tudors and fractions. We have quizzes, task cards, Tarsia puzzles and lots more. Better still, more than 100 resources can be accessed for free. Just visit our website www.cre8tiveresources.com. You can get 10% off any order you make on our website by using the discount code TTRadio. Creative resources made for teachers by teachers. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club. Need support with your phonics teaching? Did you know Oxford University Press now has 3 DfE-validated programmes to help you? Read Write Ink Phonics, Floppy's Phonics, and the brand new Essential Letters and Sounds. Essential Letters and Sounds will get all your children reading well, quickly, using phonics books you may already have in your classroom. Developed by the Knowledge Schools Trust English Hub, it's affordable, easy to use, and makes teaching phonics with letters and sounds more effective. Whatever your school's phonics needs, Oxford has the solution. To find out more and receive support from your expert local educational consultant, visit oxfordprimary.com/phonics. Every teacher loves stationery, right? Imagine getting a selection of fun, beautiful and unique stationery items designed and selected especially for teachers delivered through your door every month. You need to check out teacherslovestationery.club.
I'm always so excited when the box arrives. It's such a treat.
My Teachers Love Stationery Club box is just a little treat to myself every month.
It's always full of delightful and surprising items, including some really good quality stationery brands like Faber-Castell and Stabilo.
And because you never know what you're going to get, it makes it even more fun and special when you get it.
It feels really great to be supporting a family business that's run by real teachers. I can't help feeling like they just know what I'm going to enjoy using stationery-wise better than I do myself.
Visit teacherslovestationery.club and enter the code TTRadio when you buy your first stationery box to save £2 today. Teacherslovestationery.club. This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
Recent reshuffle, an opinion piece on the Sutton Trust website explores the lack of socio-economic diversity amongst the new cabinet. The piece highlights the fact that whilst Boris Johnson's cabinet have a record number of ministers from ethnic minority backgrounds, they still remain unrepresentative of the country in other ways. The piece highlights that 60% of the new cabinet attended an independent school, whilst only about 7% of the general population attend one. Just under half of the cabinet attended either Oxford or Cambridge, giving the new cabinet a very similar set of educational experiences. The piece considers how a lack of diversity of perspective means a government can miss important issues. Whilst politicians have responsibility for education policy, including the state school system, it seems they have limited experience of the systems themselves. Whilst the piece also comments positively on the government's focus on improving vocational qualifications, it remains concerned that the cabinet is far removed from this part of the education system. The piece concludes with the view that any child born today in the UK should have a fair shot at becoming a cabinet minister, but also holds the view that the latest reshuffle suggests that we are still some distance away from achieving this. The Times list of top-ranking universities has been published today, with many media outlets reporting that neither of the UK's most prestigious universities, Oxford and Cambridge, are at the top. The top spot has instead gone to the University of St Andrews, Scotland's oldest university. Oxford and Cambridge are ranked second and third on the list respectively, but lag behind St Andrews in key areas such as student satisfaction and degree completion rates. Full details of the list can be found on the Times Good University Guide. And finally, as government announces changes to travel rules, many press outlets are featuring details of the school holidays for this academic year. With many families keen to have a break after a long period of disruption and restrictions due to the pandemic, parents and carers are being advised to check holiday dates closely if they're considering a break in the autumn and winter, or if they are looking ahead to next summer. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio Weekend News.
Right, welcome back to the show. If you've just joined us this morning, we have been talking to Craig Kemp, who's been talking about all things EdTech this morning, which was fabulous. If you are listening back, you can go back and listen to him in a lot more detail. Apologies for my fat fingers during the show there. I was accidentally pressing the wrong things, but hopefully it wasn't too much of a distraction. Right, we're going to move on to Helen Clare now. Helen Clare helps schools and teachers deal with challenges that arise due to perimenopause and menopause. She's an ex-biology teacher and lifelong biology geek who has also worked in schools as a poet and an artist as part of her work for Creative Partnerships and the Arts Council England. We're discussing menopause, which is a very important topic, and how to support our colleagues best. Helen, how are you?
I'm good, thank you very much.
Good morning. I know you said that it was really early this morning, but thank you so much for coming onto the show.
Yeah, I'm the girl that got in at 2 o'clock last night because I'm not old enough to know better.
Sounds brilliant. So it was obviously a good night then.
It wasn't bad.
Brilliant. Okay, Helen, I've just gone briefly through your background. Do you want to just give everyone a more in-depth background of who you are and what you do with schools?
So a biology teacher, as I say, biology geek. I'm one of those people who has worked alongside education all my life in various different forms. And for a long time I wrote poems about science, and I worked in schools and museums and community settings, working across that little intersection between science and poetry and education. And really, I ended up losing my business due to kind of undiagnosed and untreated perimenopause symptoms, which is why it's one of the reasons I do this, is because I can see that risk of that happening. And one of my key messages all the time is to say, if things are happening in your body and you are a woman and you're in your late 30s, early 40s, and none of it's making sense, and you think you're far, far too early to be, far, far too young to be thinking about perimenopause, then you should be thinking about perimenopause.
And so obviously we could hear in your voice there that it is quite difficult to talk about because you have gone through the experience yourself. Can you just explain to our listeners who are in that age range, why do we need to talk about menopause now, and why is it important to be on the top of the agenda for organisations? So it's not just for people who are going through it, but it's also for school leaders and colleagues who are working alongside women who are in that age range.
So it's part of a greater well-being agenda. I mean, any employee, any teacher who is facing any difficulties with their physical and mental health ought to be able to find somebody in school that they can have a sensitive and practical discussion with. I think there are particular reasons that that becomes especially important in menopause. One of them is that there's really quite a lot of teachers who are in that age range, who have female bodies. So there's a lot of us. That's part of it. The other part of it is we don't always see it coming. We don't always recognise that that's what's going on. So that means that there is a need for education about perimenopause and menopause. And the other thing is it's a really difficult subject to talk about. There are all sorts of reasons why we can feel uncomfortable and or ashamed of talking about menopause. So I think that's why it needs a special approach.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things, one of the reasons why I brought it up on my show is because it is a difficult topic to talk about and a lot of people shy away from it. But we are trying to break down boundaries and we we do know what the benefits are. So, for example, one of the benefits of talking about menopause in the workplace is that it increases engagement and loyalty and lowers sickness absence and employee turnover.
Absolutely.
Because sometimes as a woman, I mean, I know I feel it as a woman when I'm menstruating, for example, at work, I don't feel my best self. And it's not acceptable for us to talk about it in the environment. However, women do have issues that they go through that need to be, you know, discussed in the workplace. People need to know how to support women in the workplace in a much better way. It's part of being gender inclusive, wouldn't you say? And it's a legal duty to protect employees.
Of course it is. Of course it is. And ultimately, what will happen if women have menopausal symptoms that they cannot cope with in a school environment, then they will either stay off sick or they will leave the profession. And that comes at an incredible cost to schools, both in financial terms and both in terms of disruption and overall staff morale.
Yeah, and I guess there's this also this issue of progression that, you know, if you are going through it, you don't think you're ready for progression at the same time as you're going through something. So it kind of removes barriers to progression as well. So yeah. for our listeners, Claire, can you just explain to everyone what is menopause? When does it? What are the signs and symptoms, and how can it affect someone at work?
Okay, so we've got these two terms, menopause and perimenopause. So menopause literally means when your monthly stop. That's the meno bit, and the pause bit is the stop bit. So it literally means when you stop menstruating. Now, of course, the thing about menstruating is you don't know you've stopped until you don't start again. So we generally say once you have reached a year after your last period, then that's probably the point at which you have reached menopause and the levels of estrogen and progesterone in your body have probably settled down and there's probably really very little of either going on. Now, there's a period coming up to that that may last, we're now sort of thinking that may last a decade or even longer. I've been at it for 14 years, where estrogen levels start dropping. And one of the things that happens is that they don't just nicely tail off. Your ovaries essentially sputter in that at one point they can be pumping out a lot of estrogen and then the next hardly any at all. So that's one of the reasons that the experience of perimenopause can feel quite chaotic. And of course, if you're not producing estrogen, because your progesterone comes from the capsule of the egg that's been ovulation having been triggered by estrogen, then you probably won't make much progesterone either. And that can play itself out in a number of ways. The things teachers particularly talk to me about the most, the things that are most troublesome, I think, in the teaching environment, the hot flush is a part of it, but they very often occur a little bit later in menopause. The thing that women talk to me about the most is actually what they call brain fog, which is a whole kind of little set of symptoms that can that are about the way that dropping estrogen affects the brain. So it could be about mood, it can be about low mood, it can be about increased anxiety, it can be about tiredness, exhaustion. And one of the things that I think is particularly difficult for teachers is that we can start to lose our words. You will probably hear me do that at certain points today. There's a thing where you start a sentence and you absolutely know where that sentence is going to go, and then halfway through it disappears and you're kind of left flapping your lips. So it's those whole set of brain symptoms that are quite often the most troublesome. And of course, they do also sometimes include rage, which is the last thing you want in a classroom.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, having gone through all of those signs and symptoms, I can now understand where I have seen colleagues distressed and in those positions. How can we, as line managers and colleagues, support our staff? And do we need to carry out risk assessments and make reasonable adjustments to support them?
So the thing is that you can't, because every woman's experience of menopause and perimenopause is so unique, I don't think you can deal with everybody en masse. I think what you have to be doing is creating a culture where women know that they can come and talk about it. Some women will sail through the menopause with very little problem, and some will want to keep their problems to themselves, and that is absolutely their prerogative. So it's about creating a culture of openness where women know that they can come and talk to somebody, they know who they can come and talk to, they know who amongst their colleagues is a safe person to go to for support, and then you can actually solve the problems as they arise.
Yeah, essentially, I guess it's removing that stigma, isn't it? Having that open space where people can come and talk and reflect and get the support that they need whilst they're in a working environment.
Yes, a big part of it is it's starting to make these conversations more comfortable. And I'm very much aware that I'm an ex-biology teacher. I am, you know, I've probably taught thousands of children sex education. I am pretty much unembarrassable. But I'm very much aware that that's not the case for many people. And when this conversation gets into things, as it often does, to do with bladder sensitivity or unpredictable menstrual bleeding, then these things are deeply embarrassing.
And yeah, so then therefore you do need your colleagues to support you, because obviously you won't be able to tell everyone, but everybody should have some sort of friend that they can talk to whilst they're at work, or somebody they can confide to who yeah. understands what they're going through. Helen, I know you said that we can't treat every woman the same and we can't do this en masse, but if schools wanted to develop a policy or a framework, what kind of things should we include and what kind of training should we be given and how should we implement it as best practice?
Okay, so the things you need to be thinking about in a policy are, and here's where my brain just went.
That's okay, take your time, it's absolutely fine.
So first of all, there are certain things about how a school might organise themselves that might be particularly difficult for women in menopause. And those things include things like how you arrange your breaks and your time off. So, you know, sometimes I talk to women who say, actually, I've just been from sort of 8:30 this morning till 12:30 without having chance to go to the toilet. And teachers generally, in my experience, have phenomenal bladder control, but that can get really tricky around menopause because bladder tissue is affected by that drop in estrogen. It's also, in fairness, can be a hell of a problem for men who might develop prostate issues as they get older. So thinking about where you arrange your breaks in the school day is one of those things that will make a difference to everybody. The other things that on a whole school basis that will make a difference is your policy around absence and around appointments, around time off for appointments. Now, I know teachers who will only go and see the doctor at half term. Now, if you've got a perimenopausal related health condition, it can take quite a while to get it treated. It very often, there's a little bit of trial and error involved. And it very often requires a few visits to the doctors, a few different kinds of medication, maybe a couple of visits to the specialist. So, and those things, the time scale on those things can be tricky anyway, because it's pretty hard to get doctor's appointments at the moment. So if you've got women who are afraid to take time off work or avoiding taking time off work, then you absolutely draw out the time scale at which, during which these problems can be resolved. So it's, there's a stitching time thing happens here. The more open you are to allowing teachers to take time off for appointments, possibly even multiple appointments, the more likely you are to sort the problem out and be able to get back to a situation where they are not only in full attendance, but they're back to performing at their best. So I think flexibility around appointments and around time off in general actually pays off in the long run. So they're very much two things to think about in terms of a menopause policy. The other things to think about are temperature controls, fans, access to water. One of the things that's worth thinking about is whether you have a named person in your school who is the person you go to if you have a menopause issue. Some organisations call this a menopause champion, that you have somebody who maybe themselves, you know, even something as simple as sticking a couple of posters up in the classroom or emails that provide people with links to reliable sources of information.
Helen, we had some people messaging saying exactly that. So I'm just going to go through saying
okay,
that.
Lovely.
So I'm just going to go through some of the things that people said. So Patrick Otley O'Connor messaged in saying that he has a policy in his school. He's a head teacher, a well-known head teacher on Twitter. 18th of October is World Menopause Day. And he says that he usually makes sure that they celebrate that in terms of highlight it and also make sure that people are well looked after. Well-being is a huge Brilliant. Part of his role. There's a couple of other schools who've set up, one set up a menopause cafe where they listen and learn
Nice.
About events or things that are happening in schools. Mm-hmm. A couple of people messaged saying that they wish more schools would do this and they were looking for policies because women are leaving the profession and stepping
they
down.
Are.
And it says that it's very tricky to discuss this with senior leadership teams when it comes from a menopausal woman. So it would be a good idea if you know a colleague who is experiencing difficulties in the workplace to speak up on her behalf. There's no harm in doing that. And since obviously this has been highlighted, not in education, but it's been highlighted in other professions as well. We've got people, the Global Equality Collection, who have now got a playbook, as have diverse educators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's a whole campaign and movement called Menopause Ed now online mm-hmm. that you can tap there into is. As well. And it was interesting. I had one male colleague who messaged me saying that they have menopause support groups in school.
Yes.
And he goes not to just support his colleagues, but he goes because he wants to support his wife who's going through it
Absolutely.
As well. And he finds it interesting because he's saying that he can now support his wife fully because he wasn't learned about it. He didn't know anything about
Absolutely.
It. Whereas now he's got colleagues who can educate him on it and he can support his wife, and he said that the relationship with them has become so much better now, and he understands it a lot more. And again, we just had loads of people saying that they had Menopause Club, and they would love support. They would love to see these support groups in school a lot more. One academy chain, which I was impressed with, and I think this was from Lizzie Swan, who's one of our hosts, and she said one academy chain has offered 10 mini sessions weekly CPD on training their staff about menopause and how to support colleagues, which means that we are working and we are moving in the right direction.
We absolutely are. And it's become a really big issue over, you know, it seems to have happened this summer. I don't know where everybody else was, but for me, it's been like the summer of menopause that everybody's been talking about it. And that gives us
Hello, Helen, are you still there?
It's a huge opportunity to really get in and deal with this. It also gives, I think...
Helen, just to interrupt you, we lost you for a minute there, so can you just repeat what you were saying?
I think at the moment we seem to have a critical mass of interest in menopause and how we deal with it that gives us a real opportunity to tackle this just at the moment. Which is very exciting.
Yeah, so we already know that there's loads of conversations taking place, and it's not just within education, it's happening across industry.
Absolutely,
in all
yeah.
organisations. I've got a couple of more questions. What are the self-help measures for employees? What should they be doing to support themselves? Because obviously, like you said, there are some women who don't want to let their colleagues know they're going through this. So what can they do to help themselves, and how can they find support without letting people know what's going on?
So one of the things I would say is if you connect with me on Twitter, I will always put you in touch with reliable sources of information about self-help. There are various things that I teach and encourage women to do. One of them is to take what I call brain breaks. So when the brain goes foggy, one of the things we know about the brain is that the brain loves novelty. I've got my cat sitting on my knee at the moment, and a cat will just sleep until something different happens. And our brains have a tendency to do that as well. So if you can get a very, very brief change of scenery, that will just help wake you up and reset your brain. So something as simple as that. Something as simple as using the breath to... reset your parasympathetic nervous system can be very calming. So to change the scenery and to just focus on your breath for a little while, and that can kind of really very quickly bring you back into the room, as it were. And again, there are ways of slightly different ways of taking breaks that will work if you are struggling with anxiety, if you are struggling with rage. I'm a big believer in stepping outside. And one of the things actually that schools can offer that's really simple is just not to get uptight about teachers briefly leaving the premises when they're not teaching to get a change of scenery, because that can be hugely beneficial. Other things that I think are very helpful is if the issues are around toilets, if you can find somebody to buddy up with and a system for calling for somebody to just stand in for you while you nip out, that's really useful. Do you know one of the biggest problems in schools, and this sounds really stupid, it's the issue of where you keep your handbag.
Okay.
If you're in a classroom and your handbag's in the staff room and you've got to nip to the loo as well, that makes that journey twice as long. So one of the things that can help is having somewhere safe, either in your own classroom or in the in the toilets to keep any supplies you might need. And of course, that doesn't just count for menopausal women. It counts for women with difficult menstruation or women who might be struggling for other reasons or in.
So Helen, how should we, I mean, these are all good ideas on how to support mm-hmm. women. How should we discuss occupational health referrals and absence management should it take place? And I know this is a really hard angle to go into, but we have to be realistic as well, because obviously it's children's learning and we want to mm-hmm. support our colleagues, but at the same time, how do we do that? Because as a leader or a manager, it does kind of bring up these issues that we need to think about. How should they be supporting this? How should we be dealing with this?
I think schools have different relationships with their occupational health suppliers, don't they? So it's not something I really know about. But what I really would not want to see happen is that there is a problem with absence and it goes sort of pretty much straight to occupational health and outside of the school, because I think there's a big problem there in women feeling fobbed off. And I think there really needs to be a first point of contact within the school. And actually, I think if you can crack that thing where women know that it's a safe thing for them to talk about and they know who the person to talk about it is, then you may not even need to take it out of the school, because I think that the actual problems to be solved are often not that difficult. The difficulty is in opening up the conversation to start with.
So how should line managers manage health issues affecting performance? What are the do's and don'ts? What kind of tips can you give us as leaders and managers? Because yes, I agree with you. We need to create safe spaces and have those conversations. And obviously women find it difficult. But once we've established all of that, how should we manage the rest of it now? What are the do's and don'ts?
So I think the biggest do is don't make any assumptions.
Okay.
Biggest don't is don't make any assumptions, because it is so very different for everybody. So, and also don't assume that because a woman is in her late 40s and having certain difficulties that it is about the menopause, because you actually, there are all sorts of other things that might be happening in people's lives. So I think my number one don't would be don't make assumptions. And then next to that is you need to try and ask the questions. So you need to ask the questions about what is going on and what somebody needs. And essentially what you then have is you then have the space between what somebody needs and what the school can offer. And that's your negotiating space then.
Okay. So just paying attention and making sure we've got that relationship, having that safe space.
I think it's all about relationships.
Okay.
And conversation.
Yeah. So obviously what you've said is really important in terms of if you're a line manager or if you're a member of SLT, instead of referring to occupational health straight away, you need to deal with the issue in-house first and possibly devise some kind of security for women that, you know, you understand their situation and maybe make some accommodations, reasonable adjustments that you can to support them in the best way that you possibly can. And then only after that, then you think about everything else.
I think so, yeah.
Just to finish off, Helen, thank you so much for coming on this morning. Can you just tell us where can women who struggle to find information or struggle to talk about it in their school environment, where can they find more information from and what kind of support can they find that's out there?
So the support that's out there, so for information, my go-to point for information is basically the British Menopause Society, which has the Women's Health Foundation is the patient arm of that. So if you head for that website, what I'll do is I'll put a tweet out later with a load of information so that if people find me on Twitter, that can point them in that direction. So yeah, the Women's Health Foundation. There's also social media is a massive source of support. There are a number of Facebook groups. Again, I have my own Facebook group where it's a closed community where women can talk openly and ask questions about what's going on. And we're called the Effing Menopausers. Again, I'll stick that link out on Twitter so people can find it. So that's one of the best ways of finding support is actually, I think, through social media.
Yeah, and just to let you know, there are other people on social media who are actually part of this movement. So there is an organisation called Menopause Ed that's out there. Mm-hmm. You have got the Global Equality Collection. Yeah, I think it's Nicola Ponsford. I think that she's the one that's heading that. And then obviously you have got Hannah, who is in charge of diverse educators, where there are lots of women and men lots of women who are actually giving talks on that. 18th of October, World Menopause Day.
Indeed.
So if you would like to get involved and support your colleagues, or if you would like more information, there's lots of information on Twitter that Helen can direct you to as well. Helen, thank you so much for the session this morning. That's enlightened us and given us some key takeaways of how we can support women within the workplace. And obviously it's a conversation that needs to be ongoing. It's not just a one-off CPD session, and it's not just a one-off radio show. It's something that you need to be wary about, especially if you're in senior leadership team or if you are an up-and-coming leader, things that you need to think about, because the benefits outweigh the situation. Because obviously if you are supporting women in the workplace, you do have increased engagement and loyalty,
really
lower
do.
Sickness absence, and employee turnover is low. And considering the fact that majority of our workforce is female, it is a topic that's really important, because obviously good teachers do remain within the profession, provided that they're supported appropriately.
And teachers who are healthy and happy are good for children.
Yes, exactly. Thank you so much, Helen. It's been lovely to talk to you this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Thank you to all my listeners. Thank you, Helen. Thank you to all my listeners this morning. I've had loads of people from across the world today. I've also had Sarah from Ghana just message in saying hello as well. Hi, Sarah. Been a great show today. Thank you. Next up is Graham, as usual, and then we have Khalil, and then it's Hareen. It's been another stellar Sunday. Take care and make sure you look after yourselves.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.